Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back here for Survivor 42. Can you believe it? I'm looking right at Stephen Fishback. I'm here. You're here. Oh, my God.
Hi, Rob. It's so good to be here. It's so good to be back. What the viewers don't know for this season of the Survivor Know-It-Alls is that it's actually going to be the exact same as last season of the Survivor Know-It-Alls. We're just going to run it back again.
It's
going to be something you don't know because, mm-hmm. You know, maybe you won't have seen last season.
Yeah, it's ever like, you ever do a choose your own adventure and then you re-go one way and it's like, let me go back to the beginning and let me just try to go a different path. Yeah.
But yes. I can't believe this is such an exciting... I feel every time I feel like I have like, you know, I'm dead inside, you know, Survivor cracks me open.
Yes.
It was just a great episode. It was such a fantastic episode of this great show. It was a fantastic cast, so much fun. I was like weeping at the Jackson stuff. Mm-hmm. I was literally like cheering about the triangle. I was like cheering out loud while they were counting triangles, you know? I mean, that's just like what a great show that makes you cheer for triangle counting.
Yes. What an emotional roller coaster it was here on the 2-hour premiere of Survivor Know-It-Alls. So happy to be back here with you as we do every Wednesday night here during the Survivor season. Stephen, what's been new with you?
You know, I'm moved to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I think maybe that was sort of
in
the
works.
Maybe, that's right. Okay. That's old news. I guess nothing then. Man, I don't know. Yeah, really is. God, nothing. That's so depressing.
Okay. Well,
how about you? How's your life?
Good. Very excited to be back here podcasting Survivor here. It has been many weeks since we got the cast. So nice to finally get to see them in action. Very excited to get to talk about them here on another season of Survivor Know-It-Alls. We've got a lot coming up. If you're just joining us here, new to the podcast, tomorrow morning, I will have an exit interview with the player voted out of the game. That's Zach Werdenberger. Steven, I got faked out tonight. Did not think Zach was going home.
I mean, what point? So I didn't think so either until, honestly, like there's no real art to this. When Jeff said, do you want to like give the line? I was like, I wonder if he's just doing Zach a solid. Cause this is goodbye.
Yes. Yes. That's, something that, you know, you've talked about for a long time. Abby, brought it up, when I talked to them, or it's like, you know, if Jeff's really, you know, giving you a lot of business at the tribal council, could be your night. And turned out, in hindsight, yeah, I guess you could see it coming. I thought it was going to be Tori. I will speak with Zach on the exit interview. I do not believe we will have an exit interview with Jackson. From what I understand, Jackson will be doing some press appearances, but will not be going through the full Survivor exit interview circuit on Thursday. But very much looking forward to hearing what he has to say about his experience in his different interviews that he will have. But I will be speaking with Zach tomorrow morning. I will have a recap podcast on Thursday with our friend Gabby Pescuzzi. Very excited about that. A feedback show this weekend with the great Chappelle, and a brand new show, a patron exclusive, Stephen.
Wow.
We're calling it the Survivor Academy, and it is geared towards young people, and I guess some people from the, I can never remember what Evie said at the Survivor reunion, the later years as But it's designed for the players that are going to be the future Survivor players. We're going to take a look at every single episode, talk about all the different decision points there are, what future survivors need to be doing on Survivor.
So you saw, you saw Zach, who's a patron.
Zach could have used this. I mean, we started this too late.
The patrons are not performing. We need to.
We started this too late.
To send them to
yes,
the academy.
Yes, yeah. Survivor Academy.
Well, I thought he was the inspiration.
Patron exclusive show coming to Robin's podcast. All right, Stephen, two hour premiere here. Of course, great cast. I think that that's the thing that really jumps off the page.
Amazing cast, and also like, I mean, I tweeted this, but like perhaps like the most physically unfit cast I can ever remember in the show's history. Right? I mean, which I think for me is like an advantage. I'm like, oh my God, look at all these like skinny, out of shape, awkward nerds. Like I'm loving it. Like how do I, it's typically like you get your like one or two nerds and like, you're like, okay, like I can connect with those people, but you know, you don't really have your pick of the nerds to connect with. Here, you're like, there's so many awkward, you know, weirdos that it's just like, it's fantastic. It's such a great season. It's such a great cast.
Rave reviews from Stephen Fishbeck. So many awkward weirdos in one season.
But truly, I mean, like, you know, look at this. There are very few like real athletic people, like maybe two or three.
Look, that's Marianne was saying, like, hey, I'm doing it for all the weird people out there. I said, yes.
And they're all the weird people are right there with you. Yeah.
Yes, finally, somebody, somebody out there for me doing it for the fellow weird people. Finally.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. Stephen, so let me just give me your brain dump on Survivor 42, because we have a lot to cover.
Well, do you want to start it at the boot, or like, what do you want to like, what is a brain dump mean?
Yeah, we can go there. I just I'd love to just get your reactions.
I mean, I just, like I said at the start, it was so fun. You know, it was such like, this is such a great cast. So many like funny lines. I mean, you know, obviously we talked about this last season, you know, when there's a good cast, the most fun parts are when the cast gets the chance to breathe and like play and have fun. And I really felt like in this first episode, that was the case. The amulet was fantastic. Like what a really great potentially. Oh yeah. Didn't you think so? I mean, it's a potentially fantastic at new advantage.
I did think it was interesting, but I'm always, you know, on pins and needles to hear what you have to think about something. And typically you don't normally like these types of things, but I'm happy to hear that you like this.
I think this is very strong for reasons that we can talk about now or later.
You brought it up. Let's talk about it.
Okay. So what's so cool about it from my perspective, right? And this is sort of what they were talking about in the show, is that it's something that the three people have to collaborate to use it, or they're highly incentivized to scheme against each other. So the fact that it is forcing both social politicking, you know, and then also like social scheming is great. Like that's what we want out of any advantage, is like interesting choices and interesting interactions between the players. And that's why the time warp was such a dud, is because like, so what, you know, like there was no choice. It was just Erica doing an obvious thing. There was no real question whether she would do it. There was no interaction with the other players. I mean, you know, there's like some caveat there, but, this is like all about the interaction between the players, all about like, oh no, like do I scheme? I mean, and what was great about it is it's a little bit underpowered, right? Compared to some of the crazy Survivor advantages, you know, the fact that if three people are working together, it's an extra vote. That's super weak. And then if two people. Yeah. So like, I like that, because then it's like, is this a tool for us to work together?
No, you know,
the extra vote it's is just not. A bonus.
It's a trap.
So you think that it's like you're so.
This is a curse that you have these three players that are going to be on like a side quest this whole game of how do I get the other people out so I can have an idol? I mean, could you like, what would be the circumstances where these three players from different tribes would combine their potential future idols together for one extra vote, which they give give away willy-nilly on this show now at this point.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. That there is
an extra vote.
Yeah. Extra vote is.
I mean,
yeah, that's very true.
Potentially, you could see a scenario where potentially two of them might get together and want to use the steal a vote, which I think, as you would say, you know, can have its limitations.
I mean, you know, it depends on the circumstances.
Right.
But the advantage is simply the fact that two other people have this special thing and you know who they are. I mean, we used to talk right back in the day about how one of the idol's major uses was as a tool to bring people together. But that kind of changed as the idol became, as people became more aggressive and the idol became more of a potential stigma and more of a real game shifting tool. And so after that, when you told someone you had an idol, they wanted to vote you out. Mm-hmm. Here, it actually could bring these people together simply for the very fact that they know each other. You enter the merge, you have some cross tribal connection to someone. Now, granted, that person might be scheming for you simply because of it, but they also might think like, hey, we have something. You know, it's in the same way that you're always looking for some reason to vote someone out first. You know, maybe it's just like, hey, we've got some common thing to talk about, and that brings people together. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You're probably right that you're like so highly incentivized.
It's almost like that. Well, you know, there's a bounty on the heads of a couple of these other players. They're actually, on the surface, it's like, oh, we have to work together because we all have the amulets. But I think in reality, I think that all of these players, it's Hai, Andrea, and Lindsay, they are very incentivized to see those other players out of the game. And I think Hai brought that up and, you know, said that was a really, obvious thing where he's targeting them, but they're also going to be targeting him.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool, though, right? The idea of like a side. I mean, side quest is a perfect, perfect word for it. Like, what a great, a great addition.
Very fun.
I think that was
a good innovation we had there tonight. Steven, we had the return of Sweat versus, what is it? Sweat versus what? Savvy.
Savvy, yeah.
Savvy.
But with a slight change.
They altered it a little bit. They were like, hey, we made the damn triangle puzzle. They're going to do it. All right? Yeah. How about this? One person can carry the water. And now you get two guesses.
Yeah. No one would. I mean, you're so highly disincentivized to do the water. I mean, at least when you're carrying the water previously.
One person?
Make an alliance with the other person. Now you're like away from the tribe. And you like have to do all this work while everyone else chills and, you know, gossips about you. I mean, it's a horrible, and that actually may have been like too far. Like there's no real choice if one of the choices is so awful and the other is so, so good.
Like, hey, we're not wasting the 51 piece puzzle. Okay. No way. We're not putting this back in storage.
That was that made that very fun. I mean, it was fun watching them figure it out. The great beat where he's like, I've got it. It's 11. He's like, I'm on 36.
11. Yeah. Yeah. 11, Jonathan. Yeah. It's like, Corey B already figured it out. If we're not using it now, we're never going to use it. Yeah. Okay. It was it was solved on Twitter in season 41. Okay. This is the last chance to use it. All right.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Steven, I guess let's talk about our tribal council tonight, where Zach ends up going home. That he notes in his confessional, shouts out the Survivor Wiki, that he's the first player ever voted out unanimously, 5-0.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's a great little statistic.
I guess not counting the one of the tribal councils that you were at, no votes.
Yeah, but I mean, then it was not a player voted out unanimously, right? Like, how did that? I don't even remember how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Kimmy
ultimately just left.
Yeah.
Certainly an interesting vote. We see Zach play the shot in the dark. And to me, I think that was actually very revealing, the shot in the dark, that I think that the writing must have been on the wall for Zach, the Survivor superfan, to play the shot in the dark at that particular, because we saw in all of season 41, only one shot in the dark played. Players almost never played the shot in the dark other than Sydney that one time. I think that it had to have been abundantly clear to Zach that he was going home.
Well, I agree with you. And I mean, he was obviously right since it was a unanimous vote. But what was interesting about that to me in particular was that, and also his logic for it was really interesting. Like that, like, you know, whatever odds I have now, you know, based on, you know, based on this alliance structure. To add 16% to those odds is a no-brainer. I thought that was like a really interesting
nobody was like, "Oh, you mean 16.666666%?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A major flaw in this cast. But what was interesting to me was that I felt like Zach was so doom and gloom that he might have like brought it on himself. And I wonder if now he happened to be right that they were all out to get him.
Right.
But I wondered if his paranoia actually like created that situation, because what was striking to me was that he said, you know, "Oh, I don't trust Tori at all. You know, I don't like, she's not trustworthy. There's no, you know, trust there." And they had that sort of like testy conversation on the beach that we didn't obviously see the all of, and they sort of like, there's the body language was like really closed off and she was rolling her eyes and he was like, "Well, it's going to be one of us." So there was clearly some rift there already. And then going back, you know, he, when Tori peels off with Drea, Zach says, "Well, I guess she's going to like sell me out." And then after that, he has this whole narrative that Tori has sold him out and thrown him under the bus. Mm-hmm. But that's actually not what we saw happen in that conversation, which I thought was so interesting. Like, so here's like, sorry if that was slightly confusing. Zach basically said, "Okay, Tori's throwing me under the bus." And then I think that created a rift. Zach's certainty that he was being betrayed created a rift between him and Tori. But Tori didn't throw him under the bus. Tori like was trying to save herself. Mm-hmm. She took Drea over, like explained like, "Hey, I don't have the idol. I want to clear the air with you." They came up with a plan to take out Roxroy. Zach had was no part of that. And it seemed like Zach was like so certain that Tori was betraying him and that everyone was out to get him that he basically like brought it on himself. And maybe he would have been the vote anyway, just for the puzzle flub and the challenge flub. But like, it really seemed to me like he didn't seem to be hustling to like muster the numbers. You know, the fact that if he was hustling, they were to go for Tori, who was like part of his like alliance. And then his like speech when he got back from the challenge. And sorry, I've like sort of like slowly gone backwards in time from very end to the you know, we got back from the challenge, was like, "Well, I guess it's me. Like, I'm clearly at fault to blame here." Yeah. You know, I mean, there's ways to do that, but it seemed like he really tried to he was so doom and gloom about it that it seemed like he almost like gave everyone the okay to vote him out.
Well, I know there was a lot of talk in the preseason. This is going to be the hot mess tribe. And based off of tonight's events, that it definitely seems like that we are headed in that trajectory. It seems like the Roxroy Swathi conversation, which we didn't really see them bonding at all. It was sort of like that they painted that it was sort of like, okay, there are the adults and there are the children. And then there's also something with Romeo and Zach. That's basically what we saw. And then we saw Roxroy sits down with Swathi. Okay, like, who do you think it should be? Okay, Zach. And then from there, it must have been where those two people like convinced everybody else, including Romeo, who was pushing more for Tori to be the person to get voted out. We didn't get to see any of that. I thought it was interesting that Zach really fell on his sword after the comp and basically like completely took 100% accountability for the loss, which I thought was weird. They were so far behind on the puzzle.
Right. The puzzle was almost irrelevant to their loss.
But, you know, I don't know if like, and I know sometimes that things get edited in a different way, but we saw Tori say, "Hey, great job with the puzzle." We saw also Swathi talk about how, "Look, I did my half of the puzzle." He was the one that was screwing up the puzzle. So maybe that was a bigger deal than it seemed on the show.
Yeah. Like, and obviously those puzzles take a much longer time. You know, it's 15 seconds of air and, you know, maybe it was like a half hour of Zach fumbling, like you're saying, but you know, certainly from what we saw, it seemed like he kind of overstated when they got to the puzzle, they were really meaningfully behind. And if anything, it seemed like they kind of caught up. Yeah. It seemed like they sort of like made up time by going really quickly on the puzzle. The thing, I mean, like, there's just a world, and I don't, you know how I feel about just these speculations, but there's a world where Zach doesn't immediately feel betrayed by Tori, where he like trusts that Tori is not throwing him under the bus. And he kind of like brings Tori and Swathi, his alliance partner, together and says, you know, like, "Hey, we're an alliance. We're a day one alliance. Like, isn't it possible that he talks Swathi out of wanting to vote him out? Like, you know, there was this whole Roxroy plan that Tori had. Mm-hmm. And again, like, this is like totally speculative and there's so much we don't see. And especially in that first tribal council, you know, they packed so much into that first episode, but it just felt like he gave up and also just decided that one of his, you know, alliance partners was against him. And as a result, we didn't really see, and I'd be so curious to hear what he has to say in his exit interviews. We didn't really see him trying to kind of push a counter narrative, and maybe he did. You know, you have to assume that someone who thinks he's a target and is such a fan of the game is hustling around the beach. But I'm really curious how it happened.
Yeah, I think that he sort of decided, okay, well, I'm going to put the blame on Tori. And I think other than Romeo, I don't think anybody else really seemed too interested in the plan to go against Tori. So I think that maybe had he come and said, hey, how about Roxroy? That also yeah. that Drea and Tori were already talking about that potential plan, but Romeo didn't want to do that. So I think that there were not a lot of other, potential options for Zach here. From Romeo's perspective, who I was very impressed with Romeo, right at the end of the preseason, made Romeo my winner pick. Felt like that was a little bit of a hot take. Not a lot of people were going with Romeo. Felt really good after this episode.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, but what were the things that you saw preseason that led you to make him your winner pick?
I just thought that looking at Romeo, I felt like, I really liked his background, coming out of being a pageant coach, super fan of the show. I had wondered about how, like, where Erica was able to sort of not be targeted too much, or at least not successfully, in a game where everybody's looking at threat, maybe being a smaller guy might also play in his favor, where I didn't think that people were going to be coming for him. So I went with Romeo as my winner pick. Thought he had a great night overall. I wanted to know what you thought about the spot that he was in, where he had an ally in Zach, ends up going in a different direction and going with the group to not save Zach.
That, by the way, was such a great scene between the two of them, where mm-hmm. like, just when they're talking about how both extremely skinny they were. Mm-hmm. And then also just like the, what are you feeling? Like, how are you feeling?
How are you feeling?
Yeah. Conversation. That was great. I love that. That was a very funny way of like talking about, you know, the mm-hmm. sort of first dateness of alliances. I loved him too. I thought it was great. You know, the fact, you know, what's interesting is there is something that's meaningful about those arbitrary day one alliances. And for Romeo to kind of defend that for its own sake, I thought was very smart. You know, him saying to Drea, hey, we have this alliance with Roxroy. We can't go back on it right away. You know, like that's our thing. And almost like irrelevant, like what he's done, like that we're in an alliance. And that's what an alliance is. And I thought that was very good and very, very smart and very pragmatic. Yeah. And to, you know, to say goodbye to Zach, who, you know, clearly is not long for the game. You know, why go to bat for this guy and then potentially ostracize yourself with your existing alliance? The other thing too is that Tori and Drea come to Romeo with this plan, right? Let's vote out Roxroy. If Romeo goes along with it, then he's destroying his alliance and kind of solidifying a Tori Drea alliance. Mm-hmm. Cause then it's like their plan that's being made, you know?
Yeah.
So they become like the new thing. And he's kind of even just the third person in that.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about that a little bit as well, because I felt like that was so wild to me that Drea went along with that plan to like, hey, let's vote out Roxroy, where it
Along with it, right? Yeah. She came up with it.
Yeah. Where it was like, I thought, okay, Drea, Roxroy, Romeo. Okay. Great alliance. Okay. We're the adults here. Boom. Let's go. And so quick to throw Roxroy away.
Maybe she felt that he clearly was, you know, a highly polarizing character with, you know, being such a, like such an aggressive boss, right? On the beach. Mm-hmm. And maybe she didn't want her game tied to him. You know, she's got a lot going on. She's got like, you know, multiple advantages.
She's got a lot going on. She does have a lot going on. Yeah. Yeah.
Like doesn't want like to be stuck with Roxroy if he's a little bit, you know, not, you know, he's, you know, fuming about the kids, and you know, maybe doesn't want to be stuck with it.
Mm-hmm. Although he did seemingly have a good relationship with Swathi, so it seemed like that he was not like unbearable to be around. He also single handedly won was in the hero spot on the challenge where he ends up getting the key on that first shot. You know, can I tell you something that annoyed me? Where in that first challenge that Rox Roy ends up, okay, I got the key and I bring it back and Rox Roy grabs the key and it's like, all right, you win. Like, no, there's no lock. There's no door. What the hell? Why make it a key?
You're right. They're not across the board. The metaphors are not really adding up here. You have like the shot in the dark. That's a die. You put it in an urn. You have like the hourglass that you smash. Mm-hmm. Key into nowhere. Yeah. They really need to work on their,
I got
like,
the key.
Metaphors.
Okay. You got it. Okay. You get it. All right. For that key, I'll trade you that key for a flint.
Survivor needs to hire a metaphor consultant. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to be that person.
Yes. I think you'd be great. Do a great job with that. All right. Yeah. Let's talk about the other big story of the night where Jackson ends up. Yes. Do you have something else?
Oh, no. I just want to say, do you sort of agree that, like, to some degree, Zach, like, through his paranoia, basically manifested his own ouster?
I don't think so. I think that Zach might have been in a bad spot to begin with. In our preseason interviews that I had gone through with Mike Bloom, got to send in questions that he sent out, and then the survivors recorded their answers. Daniel Strunk gave in his interview, he talked about how there was one person out here already who was giving off Ryan Ulrich vibe. And as much as we love Ryan Ulrich, it sounded like that person might have been Zach. I wonder if the other players had sort of just got like sort of like, okay, super fan vibe from him and felt like that this is going to be somebody that we're not going to want to work with. They had just seen Survivor 40. I think that he has a sort of resemblance to Adam Klein. Adam Klein was not always beloved by the other players in that season. I think that maybe they just felt like, okay, well, he's not bringing a lot to the challenges. He is somebody who's going to be sort of a schemer out there, and somebody who I think had a couple of strikes maybe against him already going into the game.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Jeff said, like, oh, you know, do you want to, like, say the line? Like, clearly there was more of him.
Never
like,
say the line, like, Zach.
Saying, yeah, exactly. But it's, you think it's just, like, his physical resemblance to Ryan and Adam was what cost him the game?
I don't know. I don't know what he was doing that gave off that vibe from people who weren't even talking. I don't know how you give off that, like, vibe Daniel silently. Yes.
Because, like, Daniel obviously being a, you know, not some like macho bro, but like a super fan himself, you know?
Yeah. But I wonder if he's leaning more into goofy than nerdy.
Yeah. You mean Daniel or
Daniel, Daniel.
Yeah.
It's almost like, to a point where it's more non-threatening than somebody who seems like, okay, this person is obviously, you know, somebody who is like, the super duper fan.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. So I'm sorry. I interrupted.
No, let's talk about Jackson because that was a big story tonight. I know that, it was very, you touched on it, how it was a very emotional scene. We got to hear Jackson's story, which was great to see on the show. We got to see the whole flashback. Jackson, told his whole tribe about his story of, he went through the process of, becoming a man as a transgender man. And so we got to where we see Jeff on the boat. Uh-oh, something's gone terribly wrong. What's happening?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Jeff comes in, says, hey, I need to talk to Jackson. That's it. Okay. Sits down with Jackson and they go right into this very, you know, heavy conversation, which was a little hard to follow exactly what they were talking about at first. And it seems like that Jackson had been taking a medication, lithium, which he took, which he did not disclose to the production, and then only stopped taking it, I think, about 48 hours before the start of the game.
So I went back and rewatched that conversation because I wanted to, I mean, it's not totally clear like what the timeline is of, like, I had the sense that Jackson was hoping to wean himself from lithium before Survivor started and maybe realized I'm not going to get all the way off it. And then right before the game had to say, oh, by the way, I'm not totally off lithium. Or maybe he had totally weaned himself from lithium and said at that 48 hour point, I've just weaned myself from lithium. But it sounded like you know, this had been something he'd been working to do over a period of time. And like only told them about it at all just before the game started. By the way, the reason that conversation was so confusing is, you know, Jeff, obviously a true pro at giving context, he is really being delicate about not, not disclosing anything to the cameras that Jackson might not want to share himself. Mm-hmm. And that was, I thought like that was really a really impressive feat from Jeff. I mean, obviously Jackson was so incredible throughout that, the way he shared so much and his vulnerability, but props to Jeff too for really being delicate about sharing Jackson's medical information.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's not really our place. Not that we're about to do that, but to speculate too much about Jackson's personal medical history. All we know is what we found out from the show was that Jackson did not disclose, his usage of lithium to the show until the 11th hour. And the show was in, I think, a very difficult position of what do you do? Because I know that obviously they have alternates for the show, but are the alternates in Fiji quarantining with them? That I do not know. Maybe we will get the answer to that one day. But I think that they were in a position of, okay, well, what do we do? Do we go forward? If Jackson says, hey, I'm good to go, I'm good to play, you know, I think it's probably a situation where Survivor is saying like, okay, well, if we had somebody else here, maybe we would use them, but we're going to have to just monitor this situation. I want to give you just a tweet that was sent by our great friend, Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz, who said, to give some context to the Jackson situation, my non-physician opinion, not a problem that he was on a psych medication, but the particular med, lithium, needs to be monitored closely and can become toxic with inadequate hydration/nutrition. So I'm sure that this was something that was talked about with the producers and the doctors, and I'm sure that it was a situation that they were monitoring. But at the point where Jackson is talking about how he's had a headache for 10 hours, that I think that between the doctors and the producers and the insurance for the show, I think that that makes it a call that they have to make at that point in time.
Right. Maybe they thought this is, you know, when production got that notice, you know, Jeff had previously said, this is an incredible character. We absolutely want him on our show.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought this is, you know, he's so fantastic. Maybe they just hoped, you know, that it would be okay. And we'll monitor him to the extent that we can, but like, let's just hope for the best. And then like you're saying, when he's dizzy for hours on end, they have a responsibility to step in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jackson, I'm sure, will provide more information and more context about all of this when he does some interviews coming up on Thursday. Until then, it'll be, we'll have to wait and see.
Great perspective he had, too, to say, you know, just this 48 hours has been an incredible adventure, you know, how rich it was for him and, you know, and just his vulnerability and openness throughout all of his sharing was really, really powerful.
And he had a really great story about, not just the story of becoming, a trans man, but also just the story about how he got closer with his parents through the process of his mom dying, and how he ended up getting a relationship with his dad.
Moved home to care for his dad.
His wife got a relationship with
his
dad.
Mom. Yeah. And then is living with his estranged dad, and they start to open up to each other. I mean, what an amazing, incredible story.
So hopefully we get to hear more about Jackson in the future moving forward. All right, Stephen, let's talk about some of the other things that were back tonight. Return of Shipwheel Island.
Well, they made it fast.
Yeah.
You know, it was fine. It was fine because, like, we don't know these characters yet. I felt like last season too, the first Shipwheel Island was like, okay, that's fine. You know, the problem with Shipwheel Island was how repetitive it became in every episode and how uninteresting. But like, I it was fine. I mean, it was fun. The three people who were there were fun. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, you know, there was that great Marianne confessional. I mean, I love like Drea accumulating all these advantages.
That's fun. You know, it'll be fun to see the ways that the season 41 is sort of like a mirror reflection of season 42, where in season 41, we had three men go to Shipwheel Island in the first episode. Here in season 42, we have three women go to Shipwheel Island. So that was very interesting, where we had both the teams picking Sweat versus both the teams picking Savvy here. In season 42, I think that Shipwheel Island, again, it was not my favorite part of the episode tonight, but it wasn't like a real drag. I think that the problem ends up being where then now everybody knows what Shipwheel Island is. And so now when the other players go to Shipwheel Island, I feel like that there is less drama because everybody knows what to expect at Shipwheel Island.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And then also it's just like takes away from the politicking of the show. It just, you know, sort of, you know, it's not, not particularly interesting. I mean, last season, you know, it did obviously have some big payouts, later on, but
I mean, let's not get too carried away, but, with the Shipwheel Island, I thought that we didn't even get reactions from the rest of the people that went to Shipwheel Island, where in the season 41 premiere, I thought that one of the most interesting parts was when, okay, so JD comes back and is talking about like, story, Xander is telling his story. And here we didn't get to see any of it. A 2-hour premiere. We can't get the reactions.
Yeah, we just went right into the they were back already. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess maybe
that's a good point.
Maybe they must have done such a good job. There was nothing interesting to see.
No mystery. It's true. It is true. That is what you want to see. You're like, how are they going to pitch this to the trap? I mean, this is the point with having to be the same beats, because it's like, it's slightly less interesting, right? Because we just saw it last season.
Yeah. We talked about the immunity amulet, but I thought that one of my favorite parts of the episode tonight was the way that they executed the immunity amulet, where so we had goofy. The three players who, okay, wait for the other players to get here and now decide, okay, are you going to, I didn't really understand what was going on with untying knots. If you could do that, if you wanted to,
you had to like do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that also was not really a decision. Like no one is saying, no, we're not going for the advantage in front of us.
So the part that I thought was so hilarious where you're going to be gone for a long time to talk this through. Here's a bowl of mud and here's a bowl of blood.
And they're like, oh, you got to put the blood on. Of course, the blood. Like when do, and does anyone come back from a Survivor challenge covered in blood?
Where,
and then like the best part was for me was like Lydia being like, oh my God, they're covered in blood. You know, she had like multiple lines about how they were all bleeding profusely. And like, I actually thought that maybe she was going to like sniff out the deception, because she was like, wait a second. He doesn't have any wounds on his body. Where was like this like mountain of blood coming from?
Yeah, I think that the blood was a trap from Survivor, because there's no way contestants are running a Survivor challenge and come out like covered in blood. That Jeff's like, medical, get in here quick. These contestants have lacerations all over their body.
I mean, Lydia definitely had to ask Kai about it afterwards, right? Like, she had to be like, oh, where did all that blood come from? And I'm like, what? I scratched myself and I guess it got like really bloody. Like, what's he going to say? There's no giant wound on his body.
Yeah. Why are you covered in blood?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was wild. It was wild. Yeah, that was great. Funny. Kudos for that, because that was, that was incredible. Steven, we talked about the Ika tribe. We didn't really spend a ton of time with the other tribes over at Taku. Most of the time we spent was from Jackson, but I would love to get your take on the other two tribes.
Yeah, I mean, let's start with Taku. Like, you know, obviously Marianne, immediate fan favorite. Everyone loves Marianne. Just like,
I mean, how
so
could
much-
you not? I mean, just like that you just like see her smile is just like you can't see it and then not be just beaming yourself.
Yeah, I just so much like good, positive energy, you know, such a fun contestant. I'm really excited to watch her. Omar, exotic animal vet. Like, what an interesting profession. Mm-hmm. I want to hear like just him talking about his work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not great strategy, but you know.
Yeah, and it seems like that those two, I mean, they were working together effectively doing the puzzle. It feels like that they have something going.
Yeah, yeah, that could be. That would be a really, really fun alliance. We didn't see very much from Lindsay other than, you know, her being a part of the amulet trio.
And I will say that in terms of when Jackson left, that the two people who, you know, went and seemed the closest to Jackson were Marianne and Omar, from what we saw on the show. I do wonder if maybe Jackson had been a part of what they were doing strategically.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. That could be. And Jonathan, you know, one of the three physically, you know, real powerhouses. It was funny, just like how, he was so dominant in these challenges. But my favorite Jonathan moment was when he said, "Oh, great, another piece," you know, in the challenge. He was sounded like sarcastic about it.
No, I think he was serious.
I assume he was serious, but it was just such a weird delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was, you know, a classic line.
Okay, and then over. What about the Vati tribe, who I think we probably spent the least time with? I know I saw a lot of tweets coming from you about Daniel, and of course, Daniel. I was like, oh, here we go, medical evacuation coming up.
What a champion he was about that shoulder. I do not think I would have been that cool about, oh yeah, it's whatever. My shoulder popped out. Can you just pop it back in? No biggie.
Yeah, no biggie. Yeah.
I mean, I guess, you know, once you've like survived childhood cancer, mm-hmm. you know, not a lot of things faze you.
Mm-hmm.
I do know Daniel.
Yes.
He's brought in some survivors, myself included, when he was at Yale Law to talk to his classes there. And I've really liked him. You know, he knows the game super well. He's got great energy, great spirit, all of which was on, you know, display tonight. And so, yeah, it's just really fun to see him out there, you know, doing well and being, you know, great.
I thought he was in trouble when he was the last one to come back and then fell and then got hurt. But it seemed like that he was able to bounce back particularly well. He had a great segment in the episode tonight talking about that his battle with childhood cancer that he overcame.
Yeah. And, you know, oh, yeah, like leukemia is the best cancer I could have gotten. What a great attitude. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, I'm so lucky with my cancer.
Mm-hmm. Got to find the silver lining, Stephen.
I mean, those pictures of his family broke my heart. I mean, you cannot even imagine what those parents went through to see their child like that. It just, it's like, it's so intense to see them in that, those pictures, like smiling next to their ill son. I mean, and then now for him to be on Survivor, you know, I mean, how cool for him and for his family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That we got a little bit. The one thing that from this group was that we got some pairs that there were a couple of pairs in this group. It seems like that Jenny and Mike are one of the pairs.
Jenny and Mike. And then it was Hai and Lydia, who apparently Lydia instantly recognized that Hai was like another version of her.
Mm hmm. Yeah.
So that's a fun pair.
That's a very fun pair, which we sort of like in the preseason said, like, these two should get together because I feel like that, you know, Lydia seems to have like the really like outgoing social game where Hai seems to, you know, have like a real data analyst, has a, you know, really good mind for the game, which she was, you know, really just talking about, you know, like how she was going to just go out there and have fun with everybody. So those two together could be a very dangerous pairing.
So you even before the game thought that they might be a good duo.
Yes.
Why? Like, I mean, those two qualities could be.
If they could get together, we speculate, we thought that that would like, I wasn't necessarily banking on it, but we said, you know, you know, who should work together? These two.
And like, was there, that's so wild. And then there they are. I mean, was there any other aspect of their personality that seemed like it would gel?
It just seemed like
complimentary,
like a key and a potential lock that may or may not be involved.
Why would a key need a lock?
Yeah. It seemed like that they would be, you know, each of them
just
were
a key in the air.
Yeah. Like a real Stephen and JT of this, you know, complimenting each other's weaknesses.
Yeah. And then, of course,
Chanel and Daniel.
I guess the two of us. Okay, I guess we're the ones that are left over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, hey, I don't have a partner. So how about you?
Yeah. Yeah. But it seemed like everyone seemed to get along. I did feel like we got, you know, for that tribe, we had a, you know, pretty good quick lay of the land, you know, we got some good good content from Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That picture of Mike in his suspenders was so great.
Yeah. Mike was a lot of fun also to have on the season, and looking forward to more from him. All right. Steven, any other big picture thoughts from the Survivor 42 premiere? Yeah,
we didn't talk about what a terrible liar Tori is.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that, like, first of all, she's like, God, there was so much. Oh, it was like, oh, I'm not like a therapist. I'm not a, what is it? What was her? Oh,
she said she is not a therapist. She is not a healer. She is, hold on, let me go back to my notes. She said that she's a caregiver.
A caregiver instead of a therapist. Like, what a useless lie. Like, why lie about that? Like, what? I mean, I guess maybe we used to talk about this all the time, how the survivors would go in with these, like, totally unnecessary, crazy lies. And we haven't seen that much of it recently, but, like, who cares? You know, no one's going to be like, oh, my God, a therapist. She's going to, you know, convince us to do things that we don't really want to.
People are worried about that. Yeah.
That scene where she's talking Harry Potter with Zach and Swati was so funny, because I, through my clever assessment, have decided that these two nerds like Harry Potter. Like, what, like a generic, like, of course they like Harry Potter. Like, you know, they're in their, like, early 20s. Like, mm-hmm. anyway.
And they might be too young for Harry Potter.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I guess that is fair.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the just her being like, I have, like, they all think I'm looking for food, but I am looking for the idol.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
So she was looking for the idol, and then she came back, and then I felt like she was trying to, like, gaslight us of, like, how dare they get mad at me for going out and trying to provide food for the tribe? Like, you said you were looking for the idol.
I think she's a really fun character. I really enjoy her. Like, I like, you know... There's a little bit, the best characters are always the ones, right, whose self-perception is a little bit off from their reality.
Right.
And that may be the case here.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think you're onto something there.
Yeah.
Steven, let's take some questions from the listeners. Of course, if you want to send in questions for the show every week, go to robinswebsite.com/s42questions during the episode, after the episode is over. That's how we'll get your questions here with Steven Fishback here on the Survivor Know-It-Alls. The Toronto Patron Party says, when Zach left, Jeff said the second person voted out. Are they counting Jackson's exit as a vote out? So, Steven, this is actually a very important question. We had a Rob is a podcaster draft the other night. Mm-hmm. And there were high stakes where, and I'm not talking about the Survivor, that the podcasters drafted teams of three. But we said that the person who has the first person voted out, that's the grenade. And your team is null and void if you draft the person, if you have the first person voted out. So there's some debate.
I think that, there's no question Jackson was not voted out. I think, I mean, Jeff just misspoke. The first, there's no question, like, who was voted out. Jackson wasn't voted out.
You are completely impartial. You have, unlike a potato, you have no skin in the game.
I don't even know who's, I'm sorry to you know, infuriate whatever. What about a poll? What about doing a poll? This way
I'm asking as an impartial expert.
As an impartial expert, I think there's no question that Jackson wasn't voted out. The first person voted out was Zach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Zach should be the grenade, or the grenade should be null and void.
I don't know anything about the rules of because the question is, like, what is, what was the actual link terminology? It was you said voted out.
Jeff
second, said voted out, but
second
that,
player
but
voted out.
Jeff was, but Jeff misspoke.
Okay.
All right. Cause that's not true. What was the terminology of your draft? It was,
we have to go back and take a look at the, and see what the spirit of the law is. Okay. So definitely that I would say that when we go to the Survivor Wiki one day, I think that Jackson was medically evacuated from the game.
Yeah. And then 100%. And Zach was voted out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Jeff meant to say second person eliminated and then.
Yeah. Know. Yeah.
All right. AJ Beltis wants to know, why did production let us know that Tori would be the one to find This is a good question. Why did production let us know that Tori would be the one to find the advantage in the intro, thereby removing any tension that she could be the first boot? I saw a lot of people tweeting about this.
Yes, people were upset about this, that Tori is reading the Beware advantage, talking about, she's saying, like, if a potato has skin and I have skin, am I a potato? Which is asinine.
So we,
yeah, we'll talk about that when it comes up. But Steven, did you remember that?
I did not at the time.
Yeah.
No, I did not at the time.
Yeah.
Did you?
No, I did not. And in hindsight, yeah, well, okay, sure, make sense. But I think that they were banking on that 99.9% of the people watching the show did not recall the person who read the Beware Advantage in the beginning of the episode was.
Right, and I'm sure they probably, like, you know, these are people who hyper-analyze every second of screen time. I'm sure they found a different wacky phrase, and they're like, oh, that wacky phrase isn't good for this reason. Mm-hmm. It's going to spoil that. And, I mean, it didn't bother me.
Yeah. Okay. Steven, Evan wants to know, is Daniel actually still hurt, or do you think he's pulling a Tyson?
It's a little bit different when Tyson does it. So Tyson on Blood versus Water, as probably many people remember, injured his shoulder very early. And then really, like, in some ways, I really think that was the best thing that happened to him, because he became so much less of a threat in that season that, you know, there wasn't the same urgency to vote him out that there might otherwise have been. I don't know if Daniel is doing that. I would be suspicious that he does not. If anything, he does not want to make himself look too much like a physical weakling. Although in the canoe, in the second challenge, in the immunity challenge, he was still like kind of like nursing his shoulder a little bit. So I do think that there's a, or the boat, I guess it was. I do think he's still hurting.
Yeah, it's one thing where Tyson, coming off of being such a big immunity threat in Survivor Token Chains, where, you know, he has to be voted off at the first chance he gets, is trying to sort of like lower his threat level of, hey, you don't have to worry about me winning the challenges. I still have a bum arm. It would be a different story entirely for Daniel to take a similar approach on day 3 of the team game.
Yeah. When, like, clearly his bigger concern is that, you know, he not be seen as a liability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Steve, what does Kelly have to say?
Kelly wants to know, what do you think Hi, Drea, and Lindsay's lies were for coming back from their run, Bloody and Filthy? Those are the lies I wanted to see, Rob. You wanted to see the lies coming back from Shipwheel Island. I wanted to see the lies about the blood. I really wanted the conversation between,
you know,
Hi,
we
and
talked
Lydia.
About, okay, so Hi and Lydia seem like that they have bonded somehow. Like, do you think that maybe it was either that Lydia's like, oh my God, let me take care of you. And Hi might have like brought her in on the secret, or do you think that maybe it was something else?
Maybe that was the similarity Lydia was referring to, is that when she has minor scrapes and bruises, she profusely bleeds all over her shirts.
Yeah. This is so incredible that Survivor brought out fake blood in season 42.
And they were like, no, you got it. We have to do the fake blood. Yeah. Obviously, we have to do the
That's
fake
great.
Blood.
That's great. That's one of the best innovations they've had in many seasons. Okay. Should we have a fake blood versus water season? Marcus says, when there's small tribes of six, contestants are usually hesitant to vote out their physically strongest person. How much do you think that this saved Roxroy tonight, being in a tribe of six?
I think definitely helped him. The other thing that helped probably was the very fact that Jackson was pulled, because Heather Cannon mentioned on Twitter that this was, and probably a lot of other people realize this too, but I didn't think of it, that this was a challenge designed for six people.
Yeah.
And it's super hard for six people. How much harder for just five people? So coming off that challenge, they must have been so physically exhausted. They had to think, we can't vote off like one of the strong people we have right now.
Who did they sit out of the challenge? Romeo?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, Okay. Then, how about this question from Daname?
Oh, boy. Fishback, as the expert of looking for an idol on day one, why do people keep doing it after years of watching people get in trouble for it? Do they think they are the exception? Well, here's the thing. Everybody goes and looks for the idol. The show shows you the people who, like, get targeted, right? So when I go and look for the idol, because I look you know, like me, people are like, oh, Fishback's up to something. We, you know, he's looking for the idol. When Joe is off in the forest, you know, doing whatever, they're like, oh, Joe, he's so good. You know, he's off there looking for the, you know, he's off there gathering food or fishing, when really mm-hmm. he's looking for the stolen votes from the Trump election. I thought that was pretty good. Like looking for stolen votes.
I got it.
That's pretty good. No? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but I think everyone looks for the idol a little bit on the first day. You got to like poke around. What's going on Survivor? How do you not poke around? You just need to be like a little bit discreet about it. If you make like a big to do, oh, I'm looking for Tarot. And then people are like, what's Tarot? You know, what is she looking for? Then people are going to notice that you're leaving camp, and that will draw attention to the fact that you've left camp.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But everyone pokes around.
Yeah. Yeah, you just gotta like not be like you know, leaving maybe the other five people in the camp.
That's right. The timing, it's timing, it's luck, it's like their perception of you. It's yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Anything else from Survivor 42? We're finally back.
How was it?
Yeah.
We're back.
Okay.
So nice to speak to you again, Rob.
Steven, people want to know who got the fishy tonight.
I thought Romeo.
Romeo. Okay. Interesting.
I know. What do you think?
Yeah, I felt like Drea did walk away with the most hardware, but did want to vote out Roxroy.
Yeah. You know, and Drea, I mean, you know, or you could say Drea should get it because she like didn't push her plan for Roxroy. You know, she goes in with all that hardware. You know, she's got multiple potential like mini alliances there. Right. She's got the one with the, you know, the fake blood alliance. She's got the Shipwheel alliance. Mm-hmm. She's got this something happening. You know, I also thought she handled it really well with Tori when Tori came and called her out on it. And suddenly they're walking away with like as new allies. You convinced me, Rob. It should be Drea.
Yeah.
Fact that she was not, you know, dogmatic about it being Roxroy. She, you know, was like, I don't have a vote tonight. I don't want to push. I'm just going to go with the numbers. Okay. And, you know, you could say that like, it's a ding for Romeo to lose his backup ally. Mm-hmm. So, all right, I'm convinced. Drea.
Yeah, but for Romeo, I do think he makes the right decision here because he sort of like helps protect his alliance of three as opposed to, you know, one of his like backup alliances in the tribe.
No, great night for both of them. I think you could easily go for either of them, but we're saying Drea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And so we will leave it there for tonight. Steven, let me tell you about what else is coming up here this week on RHAP. All right, Steven, on Rob as a Podcast Alone, exit interview with Zach coming up. Gabby Pascuzzi will join me to talk about the episode. I'll have Chappelle on the Survivor Feedback Show. Make sure to get your feedback questions in. Rob has a website.com/voicemail for voicemails. We love those. Then we will have the premiere of the Survivor Academy, where we are working with our future Survivor players to talk about what they need to have learned from this week's episode in particular.
Oh, that's fun. So it's like themed. Can you give me a teaser? Like, what do they need to have learned?
Well, we're going to take their questions and I'm going to go back through it. And we're going to really take a look at for future Survivor players when they are in these same exact situations, what the right call was. I will be joined by the great Phil Thompson to talk about everything with me on the first episode of Survivor Academy. All right.
So just to be clear, little potential teaser, spoiler. When you see the fake blood, you think don't put the fake blood on.
I think that maybe fake blood like on a finger. A little fake like blood goes a long way. Shirt. You don't want to look like you survived the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Ideally.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, of course, so many more great Survivor podcasts on the RHAP network. Of course, you could hear them all when you go to robswebsite.com/survivorfeed and subscribe. Mike and Liana are back with the B&B this season playing games. Very special Why Blank Lost with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis. They are going to have both Tiffany Seely and David Voce on the podcast this week. Of course, Shannon Gus is doing a double duty covering Australian Survivor and also this season of Survivor 42. Join Taryn Armstrong for the Survivor Stock Watch, where he's rating the players. And on the Purple Pants podcast, Bryce and Wendell are bringing you the Survivor News Edition every single week. All those podcasts are in our Survivor podcast feed at robswebsite.com/survivorfeed.
Wow, that's so fun.
All right.
So Bryce and Wendell are now a weekly Survivor thing.
Yeah. You can't get enough.
That's great.
Can't get enough.
That's really great. That's great.
And then, of course, Big Brother Canada was on earlier tonight. Taryn Armstrong is going to have a podcast with Grace Leader to recap the Wednesday night edition of Big Brother Canada. Be sure to be on the lookout for that. This week on Robin Akiva Need a Podcast, we kicked off bracket season with the best jingle of all time. You have a favorite commercial jingle, Stephen?
Oh, man, I'd have to really think about that.
Okay, check out the Robin Akiva Need a Podcast for the first of our many brackets this month. And then over on Pod Friends, check out Wendell Holland, who celebrated his birthday this past week, sat down with Matt Scott to talk about everything going on in his world, from Survivor to his work on HGTV on the season finale of Pod Friends.
Sounds really interesting.
Okay. Of course, and then Love is Blind had its big season finale this weekend. Check out what Asia Mary had to talk about with Brian Scally on the finale of Love is Blind season 2. You don't watch that, right?
No.
Love is Blind. It was wild. Of course, when you become a patron of Robin's Podcast, of course, we make it very easy for you to get to watch all of Big Brother Canada, Australian Survivor, plus become a part of our patron community. Hear great shows like the Patron 5 for 5, where Nicole gave all of her picks. Nicole gave her winner pick as well last night in the Patron podcast feed. And then the premiere of Survivor Academy, the brand new show that, hey, you're a future Survivor. I think that's the reason why a lot of people listen to this podcast. Well, come into the Academy. Sit down with Professor Rob. I guess Tori would say, Stephen, it's kind of like Hogwarts for Survivor players.
Exactly. Yeah. One of her great deep cuts from the Harry Potter universe for right. The super fans.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sit down. We're going to go through the episode every single week and work with our future Survivor players and help them avoid some of the things that went wrong for Zach. Mm. Okay. Of course, make sure you subscribe to Rob is a Podcast. robiswebsite.com/subscribe to get the links to subscribe to Rob is a Podcast and Reality TV Wrap Up so you don't miss a thing. Of course, follow us on social media as well. Stephen, it was so wonderful to be back here with you.
Likewise, such a pleasure. So fun.
I always look forward to getting to talk with you here during the Survivor Know-It-Alls. Anything coming up for you?
I told you, it's just like a ceaseless trudge to, you know, into the grave.
Is that one of the secret phrases?
Nothing exciting for me. No, you know, just the joys of everyday life, you know, watching my daughter grow and discover new things and, you know, like learn words. And I mean, it's so fun. It really is great.
Okay.
It's very fun.
All right, Stephen, great to have you back. We'll be back again with you next week. Looking forward to talking more Survivor 42 with you all week long. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.